presenting number two in the series of What If Bands Did Stings for Gareth Jones on Speed. Here's one in the style of the KLF.
Speed there, 21 years, fueled by petrol, fantasy gears, hydrogen, diesel, what the heck? We just love automotive tech, better than flappy gas, better than weed. Listen to Gareth Jones on Speed.
Hello, and welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth, he's Zog.
Hello.
And there is no third party. We were going to have your mate Stevie Zog, but he's not well, is he?
Yeah. He was planning to join us for a little testing roundup chat, but yeah, I thought he's not so well today, so can't be here. Get well soon, Stevie.
Yeah, you'll know Stevie. He comes with us to Le Mans every year, and he's about the nicest bloke in motorsport, in my view. And I love the way that he's been engaging with you and me, Zog, on WhatsApp over the last couple of weeks about the state of play in testing. And before we say anything else, we have to say this. Just testing, right?
Yeah.
It's just testing.
Good. Yeah, that's an important caveat.
Yeah. And all we're able to do really is get a flavour of what's going on. Interpret the signs, the runes, the smoke signals from Bahrain. Because at the point at which we're recording this programme, this is Shrove Tuesday. Are you going to Shrove today, Zog? Do you Shrove?
If I knew how to Shrove,
yeah.
If I knew whether I assume one is allowed to Shrove. I assume there's nothing.
You can Shrove. Anyone can Shrove.
Anyone can Shrove. Okay, yeah. All right. I mean, I've got to be honest. I had no plans to Shrove today.
Right.
And you know, looking at the weather right now, I don't think that's going to change. I think I'm gonna stay indoors and probably not do any Shroving at all.
Oh, you Shrove outdoors, do you? Right,
well,
brave.
Doesn't everyone? Apparently, we have no idea. We just don't. Who knows?
I'm offsetting my Shroving until Indy comes back, because I'm home alone at the moment and Indy's been away for a little while. And when I Shrove, I really like to wholesale Shrove, and Indy can Shrove with me. But anyway, enough of Shroving. Let's get back to testing. At the point at which we're recording this, like I said, Shrove Tuesday, we're 12 hours away from the beginning of the final three-day test, the second of two tests at Bahrain. So all we can really discuss at the moment are general impressions about the first week. So this programme is probably going to be out of date even before it's published.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of the teams, possibly all of the teams, they will be bringing to the next test further development of the car. There'll be more aero bits. They may be, you know, all kinds of stuff will be different on the cars as they, you know, work through their development. So yeah, we may be out of date very quickly, but we have some information. You know, you can get something out of the Bahrain testing. You can't make overly confident predictions, but you can glean something. I know what my couple of main takeaways are, I think, but what's your headline take on where we're at?
Yeah, headline.
Who are the winners and losers?
Well, I think the overall headline at the moment is Mercedes as an engine manufacturer seem to be on the case as expected. Now, whether that's going to be thwarted by the Power Unit Advisory Committee meeting, which takes place tomorrow, regarding the rules regarding compression ratio, whether it's all down to that or they've just built a perfectly good unit anyway, because not only did Mercedes manage to score the fastest lap of last week on the third day, that was Kimi Antonelli, not George, on the same day it was Kimi, but they also, if you add up the laps, McLaren did 422 laps, Williams did 422 laps, Ferrari were right up there with 421. Haas, 390, pretty healthy. Audi, 354, respectable. Because at this stage, the most important thing is to get track time and to gather data and to understand the car. The fastest lap time is of no consequence, in my opinion. Yeah, Red Bull, down in six, but still 343 laps with a completely new concept engine from a bunch of people who've not really built engines together before. Racing Bulls, 327, and at the bottom with only 206 laps, because they didn't even run in Barcelona, which is why they were behind in Bahrain, Aston Martin Honda. And it will never sound right to me saying Aston Martin Honda. I would say Aston Martin Mercedes, because Aston Martins had Mercedes engines, right? I would say Aston Martin Ford, because some Aston Martins have had, what, in effect, Mondeo engines, right? Aston Martin Honda. Okay, I'm going to have to be flexible and adaptable. And so are Honda.
You're going to have to get used to it.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and when I made my slightly reckless prediction that Cadillac would not be the worst team this year, that they
you're right so far,
at least one of those teams, you know, I did not think that Aston Martin might be one of those teams. They were absolutely not in the frame for one of the teams that Cadillac might just be better than. So yeah, Aston Martin clearly I think one of the things that you can take away from testing so far is Aston Martin are in some trouble. They've got what looks like a fairly adventurous design of a chassis and aero in the approach they're taking, and a returning Honda engine supplier. But things are not working out as they would have hoped. Alonso has said, you know, he thinks they will have the best car eventually.
I think he's right.
Is that really an honest prediction? Is he, you know, talking the team up partly to encourage himself and encourage everybody else? I dare say there is a lot in what he's saying. I'm sure they do have a car that has a lot of potential there, but they're also clearly a long way from realising that potential. And it's going to be a fair way into the season, I think, before they start to get on top of the things that they need to get the speed into that car.
You knows it, as they say in Newport. You knows it. Yeah, I think that's exactly it, Zog. Do you remember in the past, Adrian Newey cars have often started the season fragile and weird, and then suddenly they all come together by about race three or four, and they're unbeatable. He has this philosophy of engineering or designing or locking down the design at the very last second, doesn't he? That's why the car was late. You know, I'm still learning. Okay, I think I know enough. And similarly, Honda. Now, do you remember when Honda were McLaren's engine supplier and Alonso called it a GP2 engine?
Yeah.
It was that bad that McLaren gave up on the Honda idea, and Red Bull absorbed it, by which point all the engineering and testing had been done for them, and the engine worked an absolute beaut in that Red Bull. Honda will get there. They absolutely will. Just how quickly, we don't know. Could it be this season? Will it be next season? Adrian Newey's always talking about, well, this is a long-term thing. Did you watch the Aston Martin launch?
I didn't, no. I missed that.
I did, and I was struck by how sort of demure, for want of a better word, Adrian Newey is. Here he is, the dynamic team principal, the great designer, Adrian Newey. Hello, Adrian! And he goes, oh, well, you know, we're working very carefully and quietly. It's a long-term project. Oh,
that's what I like. You know, I like somebody who, you know, particularly in that kind of role, engineering design role, that they do an amazing job rather than shouting about what a good job they claim they're doing. You know, he just quietly gets on with the job and does it extraordinarily well.
I read a not unconnected news line this week that Craig Skinner has left the Red Bull team.
I was just reading about that also.
He was their chief designer. So what was Adrian Newey's title there in his last couple of years? Technical director or something?
Well, I'm not sure, but Craig Skinner was there after Adrian Newey had left, so he could well have inherited his job title from Adrian Newey. That's quite possible.
Okay, yeah, apologies for not understanding this to its fullest, but it struck me today when I read that. Ooh, okay.
But as we're on Red Bull, I mean, again, now I think another thing we can fairly confidently take away is that they're in pretty good shape.
Yeah.
They appear to have, you know, by all accounts, a very good power unit,
yeah.
And Max Verstappen was putting in some very quick lap times. I think they might have had the quickest top speed on the straight, maybe.
Is that right? I don't.
Maybe
have
not
that
over
data.
The whole testing period, but there were certainly, I think, there's some days in which they were notably quick in a straight line. So they've got a very good power unit. Their energy deployment and recovery seems to be very good, and they were, you know, far enough along with the car that they seem to be, you know, working on that and kind of practicing that in their testing sessions, which is a very good sign for where they are in development. Their chassis is probably not, well, definitely not the best. It's, you know, maybe third or fourth best. And they've had a few reliability niggles.
Yeah.
So they don't have the, you know, reliability that, well, that Ferrari, in fact, have had. Yeah, so with a couple of ifs and buts, Red Bull are looking in very good shape, so you would expect certainly Verstappen to be a contender again this year.
Two things on the energy recovery stuff with the Red Bull. Number one, people have observed that he's going into super slow corners in first, where most other teams are going into those corners in second. And they reckon the reason for this is all to do with the lack of the MGUH and its ability to spin up the turbo. So by keeping the car in
right.
lower gears, you allow the MGUK, is that what we call it? The energy recovery system, you know, to be harvesting under braking into corners, which allows them to be quick in the straights or to deploy when they need it. That's the one thing. The other one which made me laugh about the energy recovery thing was a bit of a handbags at midnight thing going on between Cadillac and Ford over the moment, over who's the most American team and who's the most involved in their team. Fair play to Ford. They've said, well, actually, you know, we thought we were going to be doing the energy recovery side of things with Red Bull, but actually we've ended up 3D printing great pieces that are used in the ICE part of the motor generator system. So they're arguing that, yeah, we're more involved than Cadillac, who are running a Italian engine run by an essentially British team in Silverstone. Oh, no, they weren't having it. I kind of like this. But, of course, neither of them mentioned Haas, who are, again, a kind of virtual American team, aren't they? I don't know how much they actually do at their base in Northern Carolina. Is that where they are? I'm not sure. Somewhere like that. I know that Dallara were fabricating lots of parts for Haas, but I think they build a lot of the stuff themselves these days. So, yeah, who is the most American team? Haas or Ford Red Bull powertrains or Cadillac?
I think 90% of the people you ask would say Cadillac without a moment's hesitation.
Yep.
That, yeah. Now, that's the
perception.
I think that's the perception.
Yeah.
How true that is, well, are you talking about ownership of the team? Are you talking about how many people that the team employs are based in that country? Are you talking about, you know, there are different ways in which you can assess the ownership of these things. You know, Haas, certainly in terms of its ownership, I mean, it is entirely owned by Haas, isn't it?
Therefore,
you know, you can make a very solid case that that's a 100% American team.
Yeah. You could argue how German is the Mercedes team, where the engine and the chassis is both built in the UK. How Austrian are Red Bull? We've had this conversation before, I apologise. But
it doesn't bother me in the least, which is the most American. You know, yeah, that they can have that little argument amongst themselves and we'll enjoy the racing.
Yeah.
But since we're talking about these things, you were talking about the MGUH aspect of the engine, which of course isn't in the engine anymore. The MGU-8, to remind people, is the combination of electric motor and generator and turbo that was a part of the previous generation of power units and is now no longer in the power unit. And one of the consequences of removing the MGU-H is that teams can no longer manage the turbo as they have been doing by using electrical energy to spin up the turbo or keep the turbo spinning, which you want to do for all kinds of reasons during a lap.
Yep.
And also at the start of a race. And one thing that we are learning, and I think this is a pretty solid bit of data, a pretty solid thing to come out of testing, is that Ferrari have pulled a bit of a blinder here. They have, essentially by, as I understand it, using a smaller turbo than the other teams have chosen to go with, and the other engine manufacturers have chosen to go with, their turbo spins up quicker. And this gives them a particular advantage at race starts.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems a little bit as if it's only now dawning on other teams how important this aspect of the engine is.
Oh.
Because Ferrari had raised about a year ago the question of whether changes in the engine regulations were going to make the race starts more difficult for the drivers to manage and might take longer. And they proposed a change in the rules to allow more time at the start of the race in order for the driver to do all of their getting the revs up, setting the clutch, you know, everything you need to do before you launch off the line. And the other teams were not on board with this, and therefore there was no change in the rules. Now, however, as the other teams are realising that this could be a problem for them, they are also seeing that it is not so much a problem for Ferrari, because they had addressed this with the size of turbo they're using.
Yeah. They saw it coming.
So well done, Ferrari. And yeah, of course, this means that Haas and Cadillac are also going to have this very promising looking Ferrari power unit in the back of their cars.
Which reinforces your bet with Stevie that Cadillac aren't going to be the slowest team this year.
Absolutely.
This is why, yeah, I want to get Stevie on. He's been teasing you mercilessly about this.
Well, to be fair, there's been some give and take. You know, I wouldn't say it's one-way traffic, but
I'm intrigued by gear ratios at the moment, because this whole thing about, you know, coming into corner in first gear, does that mean that your first gear is now a much higher gear than a lower gear to allow that? Otherwise, you're going to spin the rear tyres and stuff. And therefore, how does that compromise your takeoff from the start-finish straight? You know, it's always compromises. Which do you favour? You know, energy recovery into cornering or a fast getaway? And one of the drivers, was it Pierre Gasly, said that if you get things wrong at the start, you could lose 7 places. At the moment, it's so tricky to get these motors to spin up to speed. You know, we could be seeing some dangerous starts, really, because there won't be a situation, unless they run a practice start at the end of Bahrain testing this week, to see, you know, what it's like when all the cars try and get away from the line with these new un-MGU-H helped engines. We just won't know. Into the unknown, Zog. It's exciting.
Yeah. If you have, a handful of cars unexpectedly not getting away, scattered amongst your entire grid, that does not make for a safe race start. So let's hope the problem isn't too bad. But I mean, honestly, I do kind of hope that the problem's bad enough that it gives Ferrari an advantage. I'm really looking forward to the prospect of Lewis Hamilton having a proper race-winning car again. Although it does look as if maybe Leclerc has been a bit happier with the balance and handling of the car so far. Oh, and in terms of sort of handling and balance, we might mention that, I mean, Verstappen has said he's very unimpressed with the way the new cars feel. The increased energy recovery sort of maintenance, if you like, you know, the increased work that the driver is having to do in terms of managing the energy deployment and recovery, doesn't seem to be a style of driving that he enjoys, and he seems to be the most, you know, outspoken about this.
And Lando responded to that by saying, well, you can always retire, Max, if you want. was yeah. very good. Okay. And score Absolutely. One in the psychological battle. That I think that comment was like an early, it's only teasing, but it shows, mate, I'm on top of it if you're not, you know. It's all in the mind games if it comes down to points, you know. I think, was it Max who described it as Formula E on steroids at one point? See, I don't mind this. I like the idea that over the race, there are going to be periods where some cars are harvesting and some cars are deploying their energy. And that you might have to drive a couple of slow laps to put you back in the mix. So it will ebb and flow. You will get changes. It will serve a similar function as DRS. It will enable, you know, cars to swap places. It's not what the drivers ultimately want. They like to be absolutely balls out, flat out, as fast as you can all the time. That's racing, right? But I don't think Formula One has ever truly been like that. You know, you've had to protect your tyres, you've had to protect your engine. There's always something that you have to be mindful. How about that mindfulness in Formula One? Is such a thing possible as a driver?
Yeah, I take your point. There's always been some aspect of having to balance the advantages that you get by, you know, doing your banzai big move right here and now, and what it costs you over the next few laps, because you've taken a bit more life out of your tyres, you've burned a bit more fuel than you needed to in that bit of the race, or, you know, you've put more strain on your transmission and your engine. Those kind of trade-offs have arguably always been there. But I am a little bit concerned that drivers might be a little bit too, what's the best way of putting it? It's this aspect of, you know, managing how they're going to be performing over the next three or four laps, and, you know, the requirement of keeping their energy topped up might just be having more of a dampening effect on the overtaking urge and might be reducing realistic overtaking opportunities more than we would like.
I disagree, Jock.
We'll see. You know, we will see.
I disagree. I think teams work on different tyre strategies, don't they? You know, medium, soft, or medium, soft, medium, or soft, medium, medium, you know, whatever it is. So they're always on different phases. And I think there will be phases. But the thing is, how long is that phase? With a tyre, you've got a phase of, 15 laps where things are changing, evolving. With this current energy recovery system and limitations of deployment as well in F1, how long is your recovery time? Is it half a lap? Is it two corners? Is it a lap so you can then get enough boost? It may change that interval. I don't know how, but I think it will change the interval. I hope it's for the better that we do have passing. But I also don't want too much passing. I always say this in Formula One. It should be difficult, right? And when it does happen, you go, that's good.
And I agree. You can have too much overtaking. You know, if there's too much overtaking, that's probably because it is a bit too easy. And, you know, one overtake just gives the other guy a chance to take the place back. You know, overtaking should be hard, and it should be something that is therefore a bit more notable, a bit more worthy of admiration. A
couple of technical things to finish. One, lights flash at the rear of the car now to tell you what kind of harvesting mode it is. If it's a single blink, it's not recharging. If it's a double blink, it's medium recharging. If it's a triple blink, it's really recharging.
Mm.
Or is it the other way around? I'm not sure. But I know that there are three versions, which is going to help the driver behind understand what the car in front is doing, because they will have to re-energise at some point, won't they? Because of this, it's all down to how much they can harvest and how much energy they can then deploy. Looks like the start sequence is going to be a very complicated procedure, you know. There could be some spluttering and farting on the start line. That'd be fun.
Possibly more spluttering than intended.
Yeah.
If the signs about possible start problems are reliable.
And the other technical thing is
suspension, pull rod, push rod suspension.
No.
Air intakes, differing side pods, clever trick with the
Oh.
Aero tricks with suspension rods?
No, none of those things. Great. All valid suggestions and all very interesting. Yeah, all that is going on. But it was just the front wings. The new variety of front wing, where the end plates are no longer effectively the end plate of the wing.
Right, yeah.
They're narrower, yeah, yeah. Then you have these horizontal planes that reach out. And then at the bottom of the main plane, the bit on the outside, these incredible scalloped concave wings which are developing, yeah, which I've not seen to that extreme before. That's interesting. That shows you what they're doing with the, they call it outwashing. They're trying to send the air around the outside of the tyres, get it clear of tyre squirt. Tyre squirt appears to be the big enemy at the moment.
Right.
I mean, it's fascinating.
You follow the aero stuff quite closely. You,
I try.
You take a strong interest in this, of course.
Oh, I'll tell you this. I'll tell you, I was walking up from lovely Conwy the other day, marching up this ancient medieval street that goes through one of King Edward the First arches, which created the walled town of Conwy, you know, under the protectorate of a foreign king. But I'm walking up the hill and there's a group of kids in front of me, sort of 13, 14, and two of them stop and look down at the water that's streaming down the gutter. Mm. And she says, "Hey, look at that. Why does water do that?" And she was observing the ripples and the shape of the water as it was flowing down the gutter. And she asked this question because she'd stopped just as I passed her. So I turned around to her and said, "Well, it's called the Coander effect. Any fluid will follow the shape of a surface that it's flowing over. And if you look, that water is flowing around little tiny particles of the stones of the hot rolled asphalt there, which is proud, and it will do that. It's one of the principles on which allows aircraft to work. Because of the Coander effect, air follows over the top surface of a wing. It's a greater distance than the bottom surface, so it creates a lower pressure, effectively sucking that, or the higher air pressure underneath, pushing the wing into the air." I soon realised, oh my God, I was in how mode. I didn't mean to be. But it, you know, that's the sort of thing that's in my head. I'm not quite Adrian Newey level.
No.
But I do visualise.
Good to get some information out there. But yeah, provide a little, yeah, a little education.
And I love the fact that she asked that question, that she noticed what was going on. Hang on, that's interesting. What does that mean?
Yeah, God, asking questions is a very good thing. Curiosity is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
Very important.
No such thing as a stupid question.
Yeah, only stupid people.
Yeah, yeah. Here's a stupid question. So who's going to win the World Championship this year?
Ooh, well, I mean, it looks to me like George Russell is probably the favourite right now. The way it looks to me. If I have to pick somebody, I'm picking George Russell.
He's on form.
But I'm quite excited about how good Ferrari might be.
Yes!
And how strong they might be. You know, because they've shown, they've shown not just speed, but they've shown a lot of reliability in testing. And so they are very well placed to take those development steps, perhaps, you know, earlier than other people are doing, to get their car quicker and, you know, really get on top of racing that car as best they can. Yeah, I think Hope Ferrari are going to be taking a big step this year. So fingers crossed.
You know, Zog, I'm not a religious man, but since Lewis joined Ferrari, I have taken to praying.
Yeah, don't do that.
Out of desperation, I think. Oh, well, okay, maybe it's just a manifestation of hope. And as the mighty Jesse Jackson used to say, keep hope alive, yeah? And let's keep the hope alive that Lewis gets a decent car this year.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
Is in the fight. It's looking good so far, but remember, it's just testing.
Just testing. It is just testing.
Hey, that's it for this episode of Gareth Jones on Speed. But Zog, I think we may have to meet up again next week for another short, quick and dirty programme. So it puts us back in sequence. So the show that we do after that is immediately after the first race, right?
That could make sense. Plus, we'll have some more information next week. There'll be new data.
Yeah. You've got the March 1st deadline, of course, by which the engines have to be locked down in terms of homologation for the season. So a lot could change before then, and it'll be St. David's Day. But hey, for now, Zog, thank you.
Always a pleasure. See you next time.
See you for the next one. And you guys listening, keep your ears to your iPod or whatever it is you use, your gramophone, to listen to this, because there might be a bonus episode next week. We'll see. Things may change. See ya.
Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv.
Better than laughing ass, better than weed, listen to Gareth Jones on Speed.
Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang. Gareth Jones!